This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. So this morning in our editorial meeting, we were talking about the segment you're about to hear. And all of the excitement was about the unbridled possibilities that come with genome engineering, specifically things like Jurassic Park coming true, woolly mammoth, dinosaurs, and other prehistoric giants cloned back to life and once again walking the earth.
But our guest today says developments in biotechs will be even more spectacular than that. He says a scientific revolution is underway that could solve the global energy crisis, eliminate all human diseases, and transform everything about how we live. Imagine a future where growing a new home is as easy as planting a new seed in the ground.
That could be the future, and it's closer than you think. Of course, with any great leap in science and technology, the new world of genetic engineering comes freighted with profound ethical and moral challenges. And these challenges may be the biggest humankind has ever dealt with, because what the genomics revolution promises is nothing short of remaking life itself. And George Church is one of the people who knows just how close this unimaginable future is. He's a professor of genetics at Harvard Medical School, director of personalgenomes.org. It's an open access information source for human genomic data, and director of the NIH Center for Excellence in Genomic Science. He's also co-author of the new book, Regenesis: How Synthetic Biology Will Reinvent Nature and Ourselves. And he joins us in the studio now. Professor Church, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. So the term in your book that you deal with is synthetic biology. And just as upon hearing those words, you know, you think Jurassic Park and maybe eugenics and cures for cancer. We'll get to all of that. But in a way, to really understand how profound synthetic biology is going to be on all our lives, I'm wondering if you could actually start with something that you began the book with, and it's a much more mundane example. And it's profound because it is so mundane, and that is how biology has changed carpeting.
Right. So there are already a few success stories in synthetic biology, which is trying to make biology much more like conventional engineering disciplines like civil and electrical and mechanical engineering. And some of the successes include the ability to make propanediol, which is a component for plastics that are used in carpeting, and other plastics that are super biodegradable or in one way or another green plastics.
But in this case, so take me a little deeper into the science. How is biology actually making these synthetic compounds that go into industrial carpeting?
Right. So instead of starting with petroleum, you start with either sugar or some waste product of agriculture that could be turned into sugar, and then a simple organism like gut bacterium E. coli will then do a set of transformations enzymatically that are programmed by scientists and engineers.
So, I mean, you effectively call the E. coli bacteria in the book programmable manufacturing systems. I mean, they're more like little factories than little life forms, because I guess what you're describing is that scientists go in, they change the genome of the E. coli, and, you know, in this one example regarding the carpet, then the bacteria makes all these compounds that we used to go to oil for to make stuff that we walk on.
Exactly, right. So it's becoming increasingly easy to do this. Some of the cost of various steps in biotechnology and synthetic biology have come down by a million-fold over the last 6 years.
A million-fold over the last 6 years.
Yeah, right. So reading and to some reading the DNA and to some extent being able to synthesize it have gone exponentially and even faster than the electronics industry.
So what I love about this example is because it is so quotidian carpet. I mean, you would never think that science is transforming, you know, this material that we have interaction with every single day. And to me, that was a measure of how it can, synthetic biology can and will change everything about our lives. Because essentially what you're writing about in the book Regenesis is that we right now, you know, science is taking humankind into basically this event horizon between what is organic and what is inorganic.
Right. I mean, the interesting question is to ask what material or product that we currently interact with could not be made biologically. rather than what could be. Is there anything around us that would be hard to make biologically? There are many things that would be very hard to make with inorganic materials. For example, plants and animals are hard to make with inorganic materials. But the other way around, is it hard to make a computer biologically? Is it hard to make, materials, clothing, and so forth? I mean,
it sounds like you're saying it's not hard, or
it's more and more things are looking convenient and greener and less costly to make biologically. You can make atomically precise substances at scale.
So factories in the future may be biological ones where bacteria are doing all the work to a certain degree.
Yeah, absolutely. Bacteria and other cells and even non-cellular biological systems.
Okay, so that's one aspect of how synthetic biology, as your book's subtitle says, will reinvent nature and ourselves. But let's take a step back here. And George Church, I mean, you are a world-renowned geneticist. What is your definition of what synthetic biology is?
Well, in a way, it's self-defining. It's an effort to make biology much more molecular engineering. It's more like conventional engineering with hierarchical abstractions and computer-aided design, and safety is another key component of engineering in general, and putting all these things in a more formal and productive realm.
And how does it differ then, in your mind, from what we've had before? I mean, there's so many terms that get thrown around: biotech, genetic engineering. We were talking about genome engineering, but this concept of synthetic biology that brings, pure industrial and engineering thinking into the world of biology—it seems to be, a step beyond where we've been in the past.
It's an intentional step beyond. I wouldn't draw too sharp a line between previous things. I mean, there's no question that biotech involves many chemical engineering components to it, and it is at scale for production of things like interferon and insulin and so forth. What this is an attempt to make very complicated systems. It does include genome engineering as the new component. So instead of engineering one gene at a time with sort of classical engineering tools, it's now hundreds of genes at a time or more, or whole genomes.
Okay, and so whole genomes. So what does that give us the power to conceivably do then?
So when you do one gene at a time, you can make a valuable product like insulin. If you do dozens at a time, you can make a plastic like the one you were referring to in carpeting. If you do the whole genome, now you can make cells that are safer and multivirus resistant. So they have productivity gains because you can now run gigantic manufacturing processes with less concern about contamination.
Mm. So are we essentially talking about, I'm trying to understand really the edges, if it's possible to even understand the edges of this new sort of line of discovery and thinking and research. I mean, when you say we're able to experiment with and research whole genomes, does that also give us the room to essentially create forms of life that have never been known to nature?
Well, most of the things that we've been doing since the 70s, or actually maybe throughout the history of agriculture and so forth, are new to nature. That's not so hard. But what's new here is our ability to engineer complex systems with higher attention to predictability and safety. In particular, we can make billions of different prototypes in the laboratory and check them all out, which is something that's actually an advantage of this particular engineering discipline over most other ones where you might have to work on one cell phone prototype. Here you can work on billions of cell prototypes.
Yeah. Cell prototypes. Yeah. Okay. Listeners, I'm speaking with George Church. He's co-author of the new book, Regenesis, How Synthetic Biology Will Reinvent Nature and Ourselves. We'll get to the ourselves part in just a moment. But he is a professor of genetics at Harvard Medical School and one of the leading thinkers in this new area, exploding area of research. So when you hear about the promise that synthetic biology could have for our future, when you hear George Church talk about everything from an end to the energy crisis to You know, in a moment we'll talk about disease-free future. What do you make of that? Or are you worried that the pace of change that Church describes is maybe too fast and has outraced our ability to understand what we may be creating in scientific labs all over the world? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also comment online at radioboston.org. So, Professor Church, synthetic biology, we talked about how it might have an impact sort of in manufacturing and creating materials. But I think a lot of people are interested in knowing how this area of research could actually have an impact on us, on human beings, on and our health. In the book, you talk about possibly a disease-free future for humankind. How would that come about?
Well, I think that, you know, the point of talking about these things a bit in advance is so that we do look very carefully at all the unintended consequences of safety components. But an example, not necessarily disease-free, but greatly reduced and new opportunities, is that we can take stem cells out of individuals, immune cells, and reprogram their DNA with what's called zinc finger nucleases, so that you get rid of the all copies of the gene that encodes the receptor for HIV. So you can take people that have full-blown AIDS in their body, take some of their cells out of their body, change them, put them back in, and now they're resistant to AIDS. So this is not in the future, just like the example with the plastic carpeting is not in the future. This has already happened, and it's in phase two clinical trials, and people are benefiting from it apparently already.
So that's amazing, because it's for, you know, this is for an epidemic that's killed millions of people around the world, and you're talking that in, that perhaps we could see a genetic cure for it. Does that, could the same technologies, the same developments be applied across the board to any other diseases, or genetic diseases?
Well, in a way, this is not a genetic disease that is being fixed in this case. These are, interestingly, the people that have AIDS are being fixed by a DNA variant that's present in trace amounts in the population. Mm-hmm. Or in fact, it could be something that is even non-existent. It could be a new allele that's brought in this case that it is found rarely. This can be applied to many other diseases. We don't know the limit to how many diseases it could be applied to, but the interesting thing is it isn't just about fixing rare alleles that cause disease, but it could be applied to things that are common among most of us.
So how far, I mean, forgive me if this sounds like a hopelessly ignorant question, but, you know, in the book you talk about perhaps living in a world where there's no such thing as cancer anymore. How far away is that? Is that 50 years away, 10 years away?
Well, you know, many things that we thought were 50 years away, sometimes they arrive late and sometimes they arrive early. So, for example, inexpensive human genome sequencing or personal genomics, we estimated by actually a fairly aggressive extrapolation was 50 years away, and it actually arrived in 6 years rather than 50. So I hesitate to say that something is 50 years away when it could arrive earlier. And part of the consciousness raising of the book is to get us to think, what if it arrives 50 years early, as some things have already? What should we be thinking about? But yes, I think that cancer is a very complicated disease, but we know many of the causes. And if we're permitted to change our genetic destiny, as is being done with AIDS, where vaccines and even drugs don't work that well, you can get multi-drug resistance. If we can change our destiny away from what we normally were inherited, there are many of the causes for cancer that are known. They may not be the things that individually predispose us. They may not be the things that are caused by the initial impact of, say, a cancer-causing chemical, but we know the pathway. And if we could interfere with that pathway in stem cells, we could conceivably create stem cells that are very, very resistant to cancer.
Amazing. Well, let's take a look into another sort of realm of where synthetic biology, you know, could and is having an impact. And, you know, that's in the world of cloning. And it's one that's, you know, already penetrated the popular culture very much. I mean, you've talked about in the book that, for example, while there's great excitement about the possibility of bringing back woolly mammoths, For example, there is an extinct species of wild mountain goat that you describe, you know, at least one time had been brought back from extinction through the use of synthetic biology.
There's some that are easier than others. I mean, I'm not sure that that would be a prime example of synthetic biology so much. Well, I mean, broadly speaking, it is a natural form of application of biology. If you have a properly frozen specimen, or even in some cases, an improperly frozen specimen where the cells are destroyed by the freezing process, you can rescue the nucleus, the part of the cell that has the DNA. And this has been shown now for two different species. In most cases, say museum samples, you've got highly fragmented genomes, so the process is much harder than just pulling out the nucleus and putting it into a fresh cell. You need to find a closely related species, sequence, that is to say, read the bits of DNA and then put it back on top of the DNA to recreate the DNA that has been fragmented in a closely related species.
That's fascinating. Let's take a call here. Kurt's calling from Medford. You're on the air, Kurt.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is about how confident we can be that we know what we think we know when we're playing around with things like bacteria, for instance. You know, I've noticed research coming out, a lot of coverage about, for instance, the human biome, and you know, this realization, stuff isn't actually the way we thought it was. You know, H. pylori, for instance, we actually really need that bacteria. It's not something to get rid of. So when we think about these kind of very forward-looking experiments, be curious to know, Dr. Church, how you view our ability to truly know the things that we're playing with.
Kurt, thank you so much for your call, Professor Church.
Yeah, so I think this is one of the key components of this modern genome engineering is a focus on safety and testing. So you don't assume that you know what you're doing. You do your best to set up a system that full of safeguards, and then you test each of those in the laboratory before you even consider putting it into a production facility or into the wild. In the case of putting it into a human being, we manipulate our human microbiome quite frequently without doing any synthetic biology, just by using antibiotics. And I think we're learning how that can have a bad consequences. So one of the opportunities for synthetic biology is to do this with greater precision. It's like trying, instead of, we can replace the sledgehammer with a very intricate electronic circuit. All that said, is just like any other thing that passes through the Food and Drug Administration or the Environmental Protection Agency or safety standards in cars and so forth, it has to go through very extensive testing, and that's one of the things I think that distinguishes the new field as an engineering field.
Mm. On that point, though, I'd like to press you, if you can forgive me for a moment, Professor Church, because there's some things that you wrote about in the book that really were quite remarkable and breathtaking to me. I mean, one is that you wrote about how that it is possible, conceivably, to start with the intact genome of one animal, and this is vis-a-vis the extinct species we were talking about, and by making the necessary changes to that animal's genome, convert it into a functional genome of another animal entirely. And then later in the book, in the first chapter, you and your co-author write that we have rediscovered and harnessed the results of revolutions that occurred during billions of years of biological evolution. But the course of synthetic genomics will be under our own conscious deliberation and controls instead of being directed by the blind and opportunistic processes of natural selection. Now, to me, that is a breathtaking sentence. Is that George Church and your co-author Ed Regis saying that the time has arrived where humankind can play God?
No, I think I think we're just doing our job as engineers. I mean, it really is a very I think your original statement about carpeting is exactly on target. That's what we're doing, is we're trying to stick to the facts, test everything very rigorously, and not go off applying things before they're fully tested. I think that's the key thing that keeps us humble and on target, and it's extremely important to do that. Changing one organism into another, and to a certain extent, if you just look at our domesticated animals, they are very, very different from their wild ancestors. Mm-hmm. We've been doing this sort of thing for a while. It doesn't mean that we can't get better at it and safer at it.
Well, I mean, on the other hand, I've been hearing you just today and in the course of reading the book talk about the power of synthetic biology to solve, you know, major challenges that humanity faces: global energy crisis, food shortages, dealing with the impacts, you know, around the world of the ongoing population boom, you know, things like that. So it's a powerful new set of scientific discoveries that really can change the way we live. But, you know, on the other hand, I guess I'm thinking that in the past, when science has been developing new technologies, science and engineering, whose power is possibly greater than our current ability to foresee what it may be used for, you know, got me thinking of something, or a couple things, for example, that Robert Oppenheimer, back in 1945, he, of course, was associated with the Manhattan Project and the development of the atomic bomb. He said that if you are a scientist, you believe that it is good to find out how the world works, that it is good to find out what the realities are, and that it is good to turn over to mankind at large the greatest possible to control the world and deal with it according to its lights and values. 10 years later, in 1955, he also said, these technologies, as they were in fact used, or ended up being used, dramatized so mercilessly the inhumanity and evil of modern war. So, you know, he was talking about the ultimate use of the atomic bomb itself. And I'm not saying that that's what, you know, this is when we're talking about synthetic biology, but how is it, as you, as a scientist, as an engineer at the forefront of this field, what do you think the responsibilities are of you and your colleagues who know the technology better than anyone else to help the rest of us prepare for the power that synthetic biology can bring to the world?
Well, I think you've really hit the nail on the head here, is that we have and feel a lot of responsibility. Part of it is just doing nothing is a gigantic decision. It's we don't know. We can't predict the consequences of doing nothing. So it's really not an option to do that blindly. Doing nothing might be the right answer in some certain cases, but we can't do it blindly. We have to compare all the options. And so having more options on the table is a good thing. Thinking about it in advance so that you have time to plan those options out rather than making rash decisions at the last minute is a good thing. And again, that's part of the point of this book, is to start thinking about things well in advance. And finally, our responsibility is to the next generation, which is to teach them about responsible uses. And so one of the things that we've done in the synthetic biology community is started international genetically engineered machines competition every summer that engages mostly undergraduates, some high school students, literally around the world, hundreds of academic institutions, not encouraging them to do like robot wars where robots cut off each other's head, but to do it in a much kinder and gentler way, where we're making products that are safer and in a very much more positive tone.
Well, on that note, I'll close with one last quotation from one of my favorites. That was Albert Einstein, who also in 1945, regarding the physicist who split the atom, he said that they cannot desist from warning and warning again, and they should never, as you were saying, slacken their efforts to make the world prepared. So George Church is the co-author of Regenesis: How Synthetic Biology Will Reinvent Nature and Ourselves. He's a professor at Harvard Medical School. Pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Stick with us. There's more of the show coming up. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.